We've been discussing Meleches Ksiva, and we pointed out that the Rambam in Ksiva and Hilchos Shabbos has two requirements. Number one, it's got to be written on something that's miskayim, as opposed to, let's say, an ola, a leaf, which will disintegrate with time. And number two, it has to be written with dio hamiskayim, as opposed to meperos, a mashkin, that will, again, evaporate with time. But we pointed out that these two requirements of Meleches Kosev are fundamentally different one from the other. The first requirement is a Meleches Machsheves requirement that's unique to Shabbos. And therefore, for example, in Get, the Rambam says that if he wrote a Get on an ole, on a leaf, the Get is kosher. The second halacha, the second requirement, that the dio has to be dio amiskayim, that's not a unique halacha tilchas Shabbos based on Meleches Machsheves, but rather it's a universal halacha. And therefore the Rambam, even with regard to Get, is going to require that he write the Get with dio as opposed to meperos, as opposed to something that's not miskayim. So we need something that's omed lizman aroch, that will last a long time. As far as the din of niyar is concerned, on which he writes the ksiva, that's a requirement of Shabbos. And there you might say that according to the Shitas HaRambam, if he writes it in such a way that it'll last for the balance of Shabbos, let's say it has a 24-hour lifespan, then he would be chayav. But as far as dio is concerned, if he were to use meperos that would only last for 24 hours, that already comes under a universal halacha of ksiva, b'kol Torah kula, and therefore you might need what's called a davar sha'omed lizman aroch. For example, the Rashba is famous for saying that for ksiva you need something like the Sefer Zichronos, you know, where the king or his secretaries would record various episodes in the life and the history of the country, and that has to last for many, many years so that they can take out the Sefer Zichronos. That's as far as the dio is concerned, and that's a universal halacha that defines the very nature of ksiva in Kol HaTorah Kula. So for example, as far as tefillin is concerned, we mentioned the Sefer HaTrumos, and you're going to have to write it in a way that it's omed lihishar lizman aroch, for a long period of time. And that would apply to Get as well, and that would exclude writing with meperos or other sorts of inks that would really be substitutes for inks, but not the real ink. And that was the conclusion we came to. And we said, in fact, that if you look at the Mishnayos in our Perek HaBone, you'll find two different Mishnas. Two different Mishnayos. One is addressing a universal halacha, and one is addressing a specific Shabbos halacha. The Mishnah on Daf Kuf Gimel, which, according to the Gemara, excludes writing with your left hand, says the Sefer HaTrumos, that's a universal halacha. That would apply to tefillin as well. In contrast, the Mishnah at the beginning of Perek HaBone, on Kuf Beis, there we require a Dover Shemalachto Miskayemes, that's already a Shabbos halacha. That's already a unique halacha that's derived from the principle of Meleches Machsheves. The last thing that we discussed was the Tshuvas HaRambam. You remember the case of Ksiva Al Chudei Adapim, and the issue was when he opens the book, he might be violating the Issur Mechika. When he closes the book, he might be violating the Issur Ksiva. And the Ramah, right up front, says that this issue is only on a Darabonan level. There's no way, no how, that it can be Chayav for Ksiva Doraisa on Shabbos, as a Melech Shabbos Doraisa for closing the book. And the Ramah says, why is that? Because it's a Ksav She'eno Miskayim. What does that mean? His intention is to eventually open the book. He closes it only on a temporary basis. Now at this point, in the development of the Ramah, where he goes on to say that if it's only the Rabbanon, there's room to be Mekil because he's just being Makariv, the Os, one to the other, etc. I don't want to get into that whole story again. But we pointed out that when he closes the book, if he would leave it as such, without opening it, then the ksiva would last forever and ever. There's nothing inherent in the ksiva. He's not using an inferior kind of dyo that's going to evaporate. He's not using a paper which is going to disintegrate, like an ole, or in the case of dyo, like meperos. Everything is set. He's got permanent parchment. He's got permanent dyo. The only problem is that in his mind, he intends to open it and therefore break up the letters. So the Ramah says that makes it into a ksav she'eino miskayim. And what we pointed out, that was our last major discussion, was that there are really two categories of eino miskayim. There's an eino miskayim because of the nature of the writing itself, or the parchment, the niyar on which it was written. That's eino miskayim in certain cases. And then you have an eino miskayim because of daito shel od of the kavanoso, that he intends to remove what he did. There's nothing inherent in the malacha per se that shouldn't last li'olam. The reason it's eino miskayim is because he decided that it's eino miskayim. The Ramah seems to assume that in terms of defining a malach of Shabbos on a deraisa level, it's got to be miskayim on both counts. It's got to be miskayim inherently in the physical object. It's got to be miskayim in his mind and his intention. If either of those two conditions are lacking, the Ramah assumes, then you reduce your avera from an isa deraisa to at best an isa, or should I say at worst, an isa derabana. So for example, if you're missing miskayim because of the nature of the ksiva, that's not a melecha Shabbos d'oraisa. It might be d'rabbana, but not d'oraisa. But even if, says Ramah, your ksiva per se inherently, physically, could last forever and ever, it still might be eino miskayim because your intention is to break up that ksiva. You only wanted a temporary ksiva for a certain limited amount of time. And this led us to an investigation of what is the definition of miskayim and she'eino miskayim. And we started our analysis with Meleches Boneh. And once again, in Meleches Boneh, you could have eino miskayim under two different categories. You could say it's eino miskayim because of the nature of the ohel, of the structure. For example, if he puts one stone on top of the other without putting cement in between the stones, it could last for X amount of time, but not li'olam. And that's eino miskayim in the objective sense, in the material sense. But you could also have a situation where he builds something which is absolutely permanent by its very nature in terms of its material structure, but yet his intention subjectively is to take it apart. Would there be a p'tur of eino miskayim even if the ohel per se is royal iskayim? It's not an ohel aroy in its very nature, but he intends to take it apart. Would he be chayev for such a thing? And the initial response to that question is, no, that would not be eino miskayim. Sorry, I apologize for the double negative. What I mean to say is that would be considered miskayim if all the elements in the material world are chai v'kayim, are present, and the binyan itself is royal iskayim. He decides in his mind, for whatever reason, that he wants to take it apart after X number of days or months. That doesn't make it into eino miskayim. And why is that our initial feeling, our initial sense?
There's a big problem.
Well, wait, before you get done, just if you can answer my question for a minute, and then we'll get to your question, Michael. But what would inherently or intuitively lead you down that road, that path? Meaning that you can't tell me it's eino miskayim because you decided it's eino miskayim. Exactly.
I
misunderstood.
I was going to say it the other way.
I'm sorry. All right. So we're both saying the same thing. Yeah. So when the classical paradigmic boneh, you know, the paradigm of meleches boneh is, of course, the binyan of the Mishkan. All the melachas are derived from the paradigm of the Mishkan. So the Yerushalmi in Perek Chal Gadol raises this question. How could it be that Yechayev from Meleches Bona Dumya de Mishkan when we're talking about a Binyan L'Shah? The Jewish people built the Mishkan knowing full well they would take it apart and reassemble it elsewhere. And this went on and on and on throughout the 40 years in the Mishkan, in the Midbar. The Gemara tries to pull a fast one here in the Yerushalmi and tries to suggest, well, maybe it's not a Binyan L'Shah because Al Pi Hashem Yisu, Al Pi Hashem Yiso, until we get a tzibur to take apart the Mishkan is meant to stay where it is. And the Gemara rejects that outright and says, because it was Al Daitom Likanis Leretz Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch gave them the Mishkan only for the time period that they were in the Midbar, but knowing full well, and that was the built-in divine plan, that when they enter into Eretz Yisrael, they'll build the Beis HaMikdash to replace the Mishkan. So the Gemara, therefore, in the Yerushalmi comes to the conclusion that Mishkan, as the paradigm of Meleches Bona, is a Binyan L'Shah. And the Gemara's language is Binyan L'Shah Havi Binyan. Meaning that if the Binyan is lacking in the material world, in terms of its permanence, that's one thing. That's already a Melech HaShenim Miskayemis. The building is not structured in such a sturdy way, it's like a little hut, like the Gemara has in Sukkah, that you need a Sukkah Ruyah called Shiva. You know, you build a hut, and you know that comes a normal wind, it's going to blow the whole thing down. That's one thing. That's called an Ol Arai. That's inherent in the material nature and the structure of the building. But if, on the other hand, the building could stand forever, just that your intention is to take it apart, that's not in Melech HaShenim Miskayemis. You can't say that you didn't violate the Meleches Bona. That's got to be Dumya de Mishkan. So we come to the conclusion now, against the Ramah, at this point, again, you know, we're not ready to seal off and sign off on this, but at this stage in our analysis, we come to a basic problem or objection against the Ramah. How can the Ramah tell me that because I intend to take apart this ksiva, it makes it a ksiva shenem miskayemis, which is minat Torah would be permissible? It's only an isur d'rabbanan. That's not so. If the ksiva is really olam vayed, that is a ksiva. It's enem miskayemis l'slufi shah because of my desire and my intention. That doesn't make it into a melacha shenem miskayemis. And the proof is from Meleches Bona. Now, the Chassam Sofer claims that that's not the final halachic conclusion. That l'halacha binyan l'shal lo avi binyan. However, the Or Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk, has a very strong proof against the Chassam Sofer. They were more or less contemporaries. I would say the Or Sameach was a little bit later than the Chassam Sofer. Let's say the Chassam Sofer was 1850 and the Or Sameach was 1900. So let's say the Or Sameach is 50 years younger than the Chassam Sofer. Approximately, I don't know. You can look it up in the history books. And the Or Sameach claims that l'halacha we paskin that binyan l'shah, havi binyan, like the Yerushalmi. And he proves it from the Bavli. Because the Bavli discusses Meleches Kosher. And the Bavli enters into the issue of what was Kshira like in the Mishkan. And whereas the Yerushalmi is willing to entertain the possibility that the Kshira of the Urios themselves, you know, tying the Urios down to the Adonim, or to the Krushim, that itself is Meleches Kosher in Mishkan, despite the fact that Kshira is going to be taken apart, the Bavli, on the other hand, says we derive Meleches Kosher from a different aspect of the Mishkan. And that would be a Nafal Badarna, means if there's a worm attaches itself and starts eating up the Urios, and then we need to tie up the knots in such a way that it'll last forever and ever. Those knots, those kshiros, were intended for all-time use. And the Bavli rejects the possibility of deriving kosher from the Yesedos, because we need a kshira shel kayama. And it's the same Bavli that derives binyan from the Mishkan. So apparently, Says the Or Sameach, there's a fundamental difference between these two malachas, Malachas Kosher on the one hand and Malachas Bona on the other hand, whereas the Maskana in the Bavli in Malachas Kosher is that you need a Kesher Shel Kayoma not only in terms of the physical structure of and the nature of the Kesher, but also in terms of the human intention and his Kavana. And if he intends to take apart this kesher, and it's only a temporary kesher, that's not Malechus Kosher. I in the Mishkan, they attach the Urios in such a way that they would take it apart afterwards. No, that's not the kosher in the Mishkan that sets up the Malechus Kosher. The kosher of the Mishkan is when there were rips and holes in the Urios and they sewed them up on a permanent basis, that's Malechus Kosher. So the bottom line is that according to the Bavli, it's crystal clear that kesher requires kesher shel kayama. The Yushalmi is not like that. But the Or Sameach says the Bavli derives Malechus Bona from the Mishkan. And it doesn't accept the position that, well, Al Pi Hashem Yisoh, but rather Bavli is operating with the Svara of Amanasli Kanis Leretz Yisroh, which means that it was only a Binyan L'Shah. It must be that the Bavli, like the Yerushalmi, holds that Binyan L'Shah Havi Binyan. Which led us to the following question. Why is it that in Malechus Kosher, it's not enough to have the, to fulfill, to be chayav from Malechus Kosher, to fulfill the condition that the Kesher itself in its very nature is permanent, but I also have to have a permanent intention. And if I don't have an intention for permanence, I intend to take apart the Kesher, it's called the Kesher She'eno Shel Kayam and Ampotur. Whereas in Malechus Boneh, the Binyan would have to be, I'm sorry, would not have to be a Binyan Shel Kayama. I'm sorry, let me say it again. Would not have to be a Binyan Shel Kayama from my subjective intention perspective. It only has to be a Binyan Shel Kayama from the objective material perspective. But in terms of my intention, whether or not I intend to leave this Binyan, Li'olam Vo'ed, or to take apart the Binyan, and only structure this Binyan on a temporary basis, in any event I'm chayav, as long as the Binyan itself, from the perspective of the inherent material part of the Binyan, it has all the cement it needs to keep it together, etc., etc., that makes it Shel Kayom. But Binyan L'Shah, if I decide that I'm building something that's got the potential to remain L'Olam Vo'ed, but I intend to take it apart, I'm chayav for that, because Binyan L'Shah, Havi Binyan. And therefore the Or Sameach, as opposed to the Chasam Sofer, comes to the conclusion that Binyan L'Shah, Havi Binyan, Yechayev. Even though the Bavli concludes in the case of Kosher, that you only chayev for Kesher Shel Kayama, which means that you intend to leave it there, Li'olam Vo'ed. So the first question that we want to ask is, what's the difference between Malechus Kosev, I'm sorry, what's the difference between Malechus Boneh, where Binyan L'Shah, according to the Or Sameach, Havi Binyan, and Malechus Kshira, where Kshira L'Shah, Lo'avi Kshira. Again, what constitutes L'Shah, we'll get to in 5 minutes. You know, that's going to be a major plukta between Rashi and the Rama, but you need a Kesher, Shel Kayama, both from the perspective of the Kesher itself, objectively, and from the subjective intention of the Kesher. And question number two, which is really the flip side of the same question, is where do we put Kosev into this picture? If we put Kosev subsumed under the rule of Kesher, of Kosher, and Kosev, like Kosher, requires Shel Kayama, then the Rambam is absolutely correct. And the Rambam therefore tells me in this case of Chudei Adapim, I'm not going to be Chayv D'Oraisa for Kosev because it's only Ksiva L'Shah, I intend to open the book. If on the other hand, we come to the conclusion that Ksiva is more Dumya de Binyan, and just like in Binyan we said Binyan L'Shah Havi Binyan, so to Ksiva, Ksiva L'Shah Havi Ksiva, and even though he intends to take apart that Ksiva, he's still Chayav, just like the case in Binyan where he intends to take apart the structure and he's Chayav, as long as the Ksiva in and of itself in a material sense is a Ksiva Shel Kayoma, which means two things, as we saw in the Rambam. Number one, it's got to be written on paper that's permanent, parchment that's permanent. Number two, it's got to be written with dio that's permanent. But the fact that he intends to take apart this ksiva, as long as the ksiva inherently materially is shel kayoma, is not a mitigating factor to exempt him. And therefore we equate Malechus Kosev with Malechus Boneh. So here we came to the following conclusion. And we suggested, which you'll see on Yomar Makomos page on the number 4, two categories of malachas. We can split up the malachas of Shabbos into two distinct classifications, classes. One, we can classify a malacha as a malachas yitzira. Yitzira means there was nothing there and I put something there. Then there's something called a malachas chibur. And the opposite of malachas chibur would be malachas piruk. Like, for example, in another shir I was discussing malachas disha. Disha means to separate two things. Whereas, let's say, in the case of kosher or tofer, what I'm trying to do is attach two things. But I'm not creating something new that didn't exist. And it could very well be that in the case of Malachas Yetzirah, we could lower the requirements for Malachas Yetzirah. Whereas in a Malachas Chibur, we have to demand more requirements. What do I mean? In the case of Boner, when I take two bricks and I put them together, then I'm creating something new that didn't exist. Now, I may intend to take it apart, but I attached it in a permanent way. So the structure itself inherently is shel kayama. It's not shel kayama, it's l'sha, because my binyan was on with the mindset that I would take it apart. Here, yachayev, as we saw in both the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi and according to the Arsamech and the Bavli as well. Because you've created something new that didn't exist before. However, in the case of kshira, you may be attaching two strings, two threads, two ropes, whatever it might be, but they existed beforehand. Your malacha can be distilled or defined essentially as chibur. And now the question is this a real chibur or not? Well, if it's a temporary chibur, I don't know if that's called a chibur. So you've taken A and B and attached them on a temporary basis. And in that sense, tofer would also require a tefirah shel kayama. I remember when they first came out many, many years ago with what they called disposable diapers for babies. And what it developed from one stage to the other until they finally got to the point where they had these adhesive... Yeah, Velcro is already one stage down the line, but I'm talking, you remember the days when they had the pasting
adhesive
thing? Adhesive, exactly. So the question was whether that's Malachas Tofer, which is also kind of a chibur. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to say that it's mutter because eventually after the poo is pooed, whatever you want to call it, then you take it apart. Right. So therefore it's Ein Shel Kayama. The truth is that tefira was a very strong adhesion, could last forever and ever. But the answer is like in the case of kshira, where my intention was to take it apart, like in the case of the urios, as opposed, the asedos and the urios when I'm attaching them to the adonim and the krushim, which my intention is to take it apart. So therefore, my chibur is not a permanent chibur, and that's why I'm pot. Now, if this modus operandi is correct, which I can't guarantee you, to differentiate between Malechus Kosev on the one end, Malechus Bona on the one end, and Malechus Kosher on the other end, then where does Ksiva fit in? When he adds Dio to create letters on a parchment, did those letters exist before him? What's the answer? No, right? There were no letters. So it's really a Malechus Yetzirah. He's created something that didn't exist. And therefore, it should be analogous to Malechus Bona, in which case you'd be Chayev, even though it's Eino, it's Lashah as far as your intention is concerned. So just like in the case of Bona, where you intend to take apart the Binyan, you're Chayev anyway, says the Orsaveh. So too, we should logically deduce and derive the conclusion that in the case of Kosev, where you've created a new ksiva, a new shteyosios, even if your intention is to take it apart, you'll be chayv like in Malechus Bona. Which leads us back to our original question and our objection against the Ramah. And that's more or less where we got to. So at this point in our discussion, we raise the question, what constitutes, in the case of kshira, a kosher shel kayama? how long must it last, or how long must I intend that it should last in order to make it shel kayom? And here we mention the machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi, and the Rosh agrees with Rashi, is of the opinion that if my intention in this kshira is to take it apart within a very short period of time, let's say a day or a week, say after 24 hours, after 7 days, I'm going to take it apart, that's mutar l'chatchila. If on the other hand I intend to keep it for more than a week, up to 6 months, that's asur midrabban. Beyond 6 months, Rashi holds that's called a kesher shel kayama, it's liolam voed, and yechayev do rice. So again, just to summarize, we have three categories of meleches kshira. We have mutar l'chatchila, we have asur midrabbanan, and we have chayev do rice. Okay then? And those are three distinct categories which Rashi tries to define. Rabosa, can you just close the door there? I'm so sorry. Then we have the Rambam Shita. The Rambam is of the opinion that there are three levels, like Rashi, but a whole different definition. The Rambam says that in order to achieve Meleches Kshira Doraisa, you need two conditions. A plus B. They're both necessary, but they're both contingent one on the other. You have to piggyback them both. Number one, the Rambam Shita is that you need a Kesher Shel Kayama. We'll have to figure out what that means. And number two, you need a Maisa Uman. Now, a Maisa Uman is what the Gemara calls Gmalim Asfanim. Asfanim are the sellers. They make special knots. And the Gemalim also, for the sake of saddling up a camel, they also have to make special knots or to attach the camel to the ground, whatever it might be. Now, the Rambam holds like this. If both conditions are met, you have violated Kshira Doraisa. If one condition out of the two, either or, is met, then you're Chayev Derabbanan. If neither of those conditions are met, then it's Mutar L'chatchila. So, for example, if you create, according to the Rambam, a Kesher Shel Kayama that's not a Maisa Uman, that's Asur Mirabbanan. If you would find a case, which I doubt if you would, of a Maisa Uman that was not a Kesher Shel Kayama, then you would violate an Issur Derabbanan. If you were to find a Kesher that's neither Shel Kayama, again, we'll come back to this concept of Kayama in just a second, nor is it a Maisa Uman, that would be Mutar L'chatchila.
When you say a Maisa Uman, so the sailors have special knots.
Right.
If you, as a non-sailor, did a sailor's knot, that's
right.
A Maisa Uman?
Right, correct. I don't have to be a registered
right.
Sailor.
That's what I mean. That's right. Right.
It's the din of the knot itself, right. And the kesher itself. Now let's say, for example, bows, you know, when we tie our shoes. So according to Rashi, we're going to have to say that the reason why it's mutar l'chatchila is because he intends to take it apart after a day or up to a week. Now, I know people who tie their shoes and they like to leave them tied. In other words, they make a loose bow in such a way that they don't have to bother tying their shoes. And again, you shouldn't laugh at that because it could be that time is very precious. So if they want to wear loafers like I'm wearing now, they just slip their feet in. If they're wearing shoes with bow with laces, then they just keep it tied. According to Rashi, that might be a problem on Shabbos, to tie your shoes with a bow. According to the Rambam, on the other hand, that would be mutar l'chatchila, even if he leaves it for a week. Why? Because according to the Rambam, it's neither a Maisa Uman, a Kesher Shel Uman, nor is it a Kesher Shel Kayom. Now, what's a Kesher Shel Kayom, according to the Rambam? So that's our next question. So here the sparks are flying in all directions. I mean, it's really a major plugta. We have on the one hand the sheet of the Taz. The Taz is of the opinion that according to the Rambam, if I intend to leave the Kesher for one full day, Again, we have to understand what that one full day is, but anyway, we'll call it, just for our purposes, we'll say Kesher Shel Yom. That makes it into a Kesher Shel Kayom. Less than a day is Eina Shel Kayom. Obviously, the Taz is a big chumra, because the Taz is going to tell me that any Kesher whatsoever, even if it's not Shel Umnin, is going to be also according to the Rambam if I intend to leave it there for one day. But thank God, Baruch Hashem, there's another shita in this, and that's the shita of the Prima Gadim. The Mishnah Berurah accepts the Prima Gadim, and they go to the other extreme, that according to the Rambam, Kesher Shel Kayom means a Kesher Li'ola, forever and ever. So let's accept for the time being, just for our operational purposes, the Prima Gadim and the Mishnah Berurah. So if I tie a bow, I intend to take it apart at some point in my life. Maybe because I want to replace the laces, maybe because it's better to shine my shoes without the laces on. But eventually I'm going to take apart that and it's not a Maisa Uman, then there's no problem. According to the Taz in the Rambam, it could be a problem if he ties a bow on his shoes and he intends to leave it there, because it goes beyond the day. And according to Rashi, that's also a problem, because Rashi holds that if he intends... You know, if he intends to... one second, according... Wait, just let me just double check that. According to Rashi Shita, there are three categories. Yeah. According to Rashi, if he intends to keep it there beyond a week... Yeah, there's going to be enough community between the Taz and the Rambam and Rashi sheet in a person who's going to take it apart every week, let's say. According to Rashi, that would be mutter. According to the Rambam and the Taz, that would be awesome. According to Prima Gadim in the Rambam, it would be mutter, because it's not a Kesher Shel Kayom. And it's also not a Maisa Uman. See, according to Rashi, you don't even have to mention the fact that it's not a Maisa Uman. The very fact that he's going to take it apart within the week, that itself makes it mutter l'chatchila, according to Rashi. And we'll get back to this in a few minutes, believe it. Okay, so now what we want to study is, why is it that kosher l'sha is mutter, let's say according to Rashi, even l'chatchila, if he's kosher l'sha, or according to the Rambam, if it's kosher l'sha plus, it was not a ma'isa uman, it's mutter l'chatchila, and yet binyan l'sha, we said, according to the Arsameach, is a malacha d'oraisa. So we gave one explanation before about the difference between a Meleches Yitzira and a Meleches Chibur. Now we want to try to see if we can find another approach. Now this second approach, I have for you on the flip side of your handout, of the Mar Makomas page, and it should say on the bottom, it should say 220. Just 1 second, or 221.
Yeah.
Just 1 second. I don't remember again what I gave you. 221. And this introduces a Chaye Adam. Now, Rabosa, in order to appreciate what we're going to do now, the Chaye Adam and the Avnei Nezer and Meleches Kosher, we want to reiterate what we've said in the past about Meleches Kosev in the Rambam's frame of reference, that sometimes you're potter because of Meleches Machsheves, it's a unique Shabbos halach, and sometimes you're potter because it's not ksiva in a universal halachic definition of ksiva. This substructure, or this distinction between Hafkas Meleches Machsheves, or a ptur that's a din miyuchad l'Shabbos, as opposed to Hafkas Etzem Hashem, as a din in Kol Tarkula, which we're familiar with in Meleches Kosev, now comes to the fore in Meleches Kosher. When I tell you that Kesher She'ena Shel Kayoma is Potur on Shabbos, and that's crystal clear from the Bavli, as the Arsameach points out, because that's why the Bavli tells you that you can only derive Kesher in the Mishkan from the case of Kesher on the rips in the Urios. Am I producing, am I presenting a Shabbos halacha or a universal halacha? And this has tremendous implications for mitzvahs like tefillin and tzitzis, which require a kesher. So for example, in the case of tefillin, we need a kesher shel kayom, which presents a tremendous problem, which I hinted at last time. Today I want to take it apart a little bit more carefully. When you borrow a pair of tefillin, if your head is bigger than his, or the other way around, and smaller than his, then you adjust the kesher, and you have to adjust the kesher. But it's not a kesher shel kayom, because now you're going to take apart the kesher, retie it, only on a temporary basis, in order to fit you as the borrower, but return it to its owner. Now, if we're going to say that kesher shel kayoma, which means that it has to last a day, according to the way the Taz understood the Rambam, or the way the Prima Gadol Mishnah Berurah understood the Rambam, has to be li'olam, otherwise you're potter on Shabbos. Are you potter on Shabbos because that's not called a kesher? Or you potter on Shabbos because in the Mishnah, at the beginning of Perek HaBona, that with regard to Shabbos, we need a melacha miskayemes, and that's a unique halacha derived from melechas machshavos. So keep in mind that there's going to be a nafkamina for tefillin, and we'll see tzitzis, and even for chalitza, because in chalitza you also need a kesher shel kayom. Perhaps. So here we want to mention the chayodom and the avnei nezer, which you'll see here on the top of your page. The chayodom is of the opinion that this halach of kesher shel kayoma that generates a ptur in the case of kesher l'sha is a unique Shabbos halacha derived from the principle of melacha miskayemes b'Shabbos, meaning meleches machsheves. If that be the case for both sides, then according to the Chayodam, we could rest easy and breathe a sigh of relief in the case of tefillin. Because even though I take apart the kesher, if I want to borrow your tefillin, and then we're going to put back the kesher for me, but then take it apart for you. So obviously it's not a kesher shel kayoma. Ein achinami, I'd be potter in Shabbos, but the Chayodim insists that I'm potter in Shabbos because of the unique Shabbos principle called Moloch HaMis Kayemes. But as far as tefillin is concerned, where there is no halach of Moloch HaMis Kayemes, there's no principle of that sort, no demand, then the tefillin would be kosher even though he intends to take it apart and put it back together again. So that's what we want to remember now as we move forward, the Chaye Adam. Then we have the Avnei Nezer. And the Avnei Nezer wrote two tshuvas, one in Kuf Pei and one in Kuf Pei Gimel. Originally, initially, he accepted the Chaye Adam, but then he changed his mind. I'm going to soon see why. And he came to the conclusion that the halach of Kesher Shel Kayoma is not a unique Shabbos halacha limited to the area of Shabbos, but rather it expands and includes Kol HaTorah Kula. Any kesher, as the definition of a kesher in Kol HaTorah Kula, requires Shel Kayom. And therefore, if it's only for a few hours or something along that line, then it's not considered a kesher B'Kol HaTorah Kula. Why? Because your intention is to take it apart after an hour, after a half a day, whatever it might be. And therefore, the Avnei Nezer tells us, La halacha lemaisa, that if a person borrows tefillin from his friend and he rearranges the knot by loosening and recreating the knot, and then he's going to give it back to its owner and again take it apart, Lo yatza yidei chovasa. So if anybody wants to underline those words, Lo yatza yidei chovasa. This is obviously a tremendous chumrah. But let's see what motivated the Avnei Nezer to come to this conclusion. And for that we have to see a sugya in Mesechta Erevin. The sugya in Mesechta Erevin, Daf Tzadi Zion, touches and addresses this question of whether a kesher l'sha, a temporary kesher, again temporary because of your intention, is kosher l'tefillin. And we're going to see that there's a tremendous machlokas here between Rabbeinu Elio and Rabbeinu Tam, two of the Baalei HaTosfos, about the definition of kesher in tefillin. Rabbeinu Elio bases himself on the pasuk ukshartem. What does ukshartem mean? What would you say? How would you translate the word ukshartem? Ah, so you're in Rabbeinu Tam's camp. But Rabbeinu Elio, one of the Baalei HaTosfos, who was before Rabbeinu Tam, he thought ukshartem means to tie the kesher. Not to bind the tefillin to your arm, but to tie the kesher to the tefillin. And therefore Rabbeinu Elio required that on a daily basis, you undo the kesher and then you recreate the kesher. And don't quote me on this, but if I'm not mistaken, the Rav Shulchan Aruch of the Alter Rebbe paskins like Rabbeinu Elio. So a true blue Lubavitcher will actually take apart, I should show and tell you, because I wear Lubavitcher tefillin, because my father was seven generations Lubavitch. So what you do is you loosen the kesher, and then you tighten it again. It's very hard, but as a bar mitzvah boy, you learn how to do it. Once you learn how to do it, it becomes like, you don't even pay attention, and you do it. So that's called ukshartem, according to Rabbeinu Elio. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and he holds the kshira is not the kesher.
Just
the shalyat. Because with regard to shal rosh, it says, v'hayu l'totofos b'ininech. V'hayu means they should be on your head. It doesn't mean you have to create the kesher. Even though, again, kesher shal rosh is also a halach l'moshe b'sinai, an absolute requirement, but not to create the kesher. It doesn't say ukshartem, except with regard to the shalyat. So Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rabbeinu Elio, and basically from Rabbeinu Tam's perspective, Uksharta really means hiduk. Hiduk means to tighten it on your body. Or get onto your arm. And Rabbeinu Tam has a fascinating proof against Rabbeinu Elio. The Gemara there in Erevin assumes that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to tie the kesher shel tefillin. Now, why that comes up in the Gemara is very fascinating. The Gemara talks about a case where on Shabbos he finds tefillin that are out there in the wild. Somebody, you know, was negligent in protecting his tefillin, so there's a big, big mitzvah called Shmiras HaTefillin. And the Gemara is going to tell us that you're allowed in this case to wear the tefillin, and it's not called an Iser of Baal Tosif, even though the Torah says that on Shabbos you're potter from tefillin, because you're doing it for the purpose of protecting the tefillin. But again, you've got to wear it in a way that you would wear tefillin, and therefore you have to make the kesher. Now, the Gemara says that in such a case you cannot make the kesher. You'll have to find an alternative solution to Shmiras HaTefillin. Frek Rabbeinu Tam, I don't get it. Why is there a problem of making this kesher on Shabbos? It's not a kesher shel kayama. Why? Because according to you, Rabbeinu Elio, every morning you're going to take apart the kesher and re-tie it. So that's certainly not a kesher shel kayama. Why is the Gemara therefore objecting to creating this kesher on Shabbos? The answer is, says Rabbeinu Tam, that you don't have to make the kesher shel tefillin on a daily basis. So ukshartem means just tie it down, bind it to your arm. But that kesher itself will remain li'olam va'ed. And if it will remain li'olam va'ed, it becomes a kesher shel kayama, which is also for Shabbos. But how will Rabbeinu Elio justify that the iser kesher, in this case of Shabbos, with a kesher shel tefillin, is a kesher shel kayama and violates the kosher of Shabbos? If according to you, Rabbeinu Elio, on a daily basis, you take it apart and you put it back together. Says the Avnei Nezer, I don't understand Rabbeinu Tam's kasha. Rabbeinu Tam is assuming an equation between kesher of Shabbos and kesher of tefillin. So according to the Chayyadam, again, this we're adding to the words of the Avnei Nezer, if you accept the premise of the Chayyadam, that the requirement of Keshesh al Kayom is a unique Shabbos halacha, then Rabbeinu Tam's kasha is no kasha. Of course, it could very well be that even according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu, although as far as tefillin is concerned, there's no requirement of Keshesh al Kayom, but as far as Shabbos is concerned, you require Keshesh al Kayom. And therefore, he says, Rabbeinu Tam's kasha is a very good kasha. Namely, that your definition of kesher is not Shabbosdik, but universal. And in that case, Rabbeinu Tam says that apparently, just like you need kesher shel kayoma in Shabbos, you need kesher shel kayoma in tefillin against Rabbeinu Eliyahu. And therefore, creating that kesher on Shabbos is going to be a problem. So the basic premise of Rabbeinu Tam's analogy is that kesher shel Shabbos and kesher shel tefillin are hainu hach, and they both require a kesher shel kayom. Which means that Rabbeinu Tam is going to conclude that the kesher of tefillin is a kesher shel kayoma, just like the kesher of Shabbos is a kesher shel kayom. And therefore, if you're tying your kesher on tefillin, right, to be machshir your tefillin, you must tie it in a way that's a kesher shel kayom, for which you'd be chayim on Shabbos. And that's why the Gemara objects to creating this kesher on Shabbos. Says Rabbeinu Tam, obviously the kesher of tefillin therefore is a kesher shel kayom, which means the olam vod, not the way Rabbeinu Eliyahu understood it. But the Avnei Nezer gets very excited about this, because this is wonderful. It tells you that kesher shel tefillin is like kesher shel Shabbos and requires a kesher shel kayom. In which case, barring tefillin is going to be a big problem. Not the way the Chayyadim would say. The Chayyadim would argue, well, yeah, in Shabbos you require kesher shel kayom because of Melechus Machshavos. But in tefillin, who cares? As long as the tefillin physically, materially, have the kesher will last. If left alone, the fact that you intend to take it apart, that has no impact on the kashrus of the kesher shel tefillin, and therefore, according to the Chayyadim, there's no problem in barring tefillin, taking apart the kesher and replacing it. Says the Avnei Nezer, that's because the Chayyadim understood that the kesher shel kayom is a requirement in Shabbos as a unique requirement of Melechus Machshavos under the Mishnah at the beginning of Ambona. And if that be the case, then in tefillin I have no problem. But then we don't understand the argument here between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Eliyahu, in which Rabbeinu Tam argues that just like you need a kesher shel kayom on Shabbos, you need a kesher shel kayom on tefillin. And if Rabbeinu Eliyahu was correct, then why is that so? I mean, you don't have in tefillin, you don't have a kesher shel kayom. So why can't he tie that? You know, he can tie the tefillin, the kesher shel tefillin on Shabbos, and he doesn't violate Melech Shabbos, and yet he has a kosher pair of tefillin because you don't require kesher shel kayoma on Shabbos. And how is the Chayyadim going to deal with this? But the Avnei Nezer l'shitaso says, because the Chayyadim is wrong, I'm going to disagree with him. I'm going to claim that the requirement of kesher shel kayoma in Shabbos is nothing more than a reflection. It's an application of the universal requirement of kesher. And without shel kayoma, it's not a kesher. So if you intend to take apart the kesher, it's not a kesher. So why does Gemara, therefore, according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu, conclude that you have a problem making this kesher on Shabbos? It's only a temporary kesher, according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu. No, Rabbeinu Tam says it's not a temporary kesher, it's a permanent kesher. Because if it's not a permanent kesher, then it's not a kesher. Neither for Shabbos, nor for Kol HaTorah Kula, meaning tefillin. And therefore, says the Avnei Nezer, if this be the case, we're in trouble. We're in trouble with borrowing tefillin. Now let's take this one step further. The Mardechai wrote a work, he composed a work called Hilchas Tefillin. And in that presentation, he tries to defend Rabbeinu Eliyahu against Rabbeinu Tam. And he says the following: Kevan Shrachmana Omar Likshar b'chol yom rachmona achshavei lekesher. But also, just out of curiosity, how many people here in the room have ever heard of this svara called achshavei? So achshavei is a shas principle. I'll give you an example just to get you in the mood for achshavei. In macholas asuros, forbidden foods, we have a principle called nifsal miachilas kelef, that something that lost its edibility, if there's such a word, it's no longer edible, is not awesome. Now I decide to eat it. This is the issue in medicines. A lot of medicines are made up of, especially those that are coated, are made up of animal parts, which are macholas asuras, which are not permissible. But they turn it into a powder. That powder is not edible. But when mixed properly with various ingredients, magically, it becomes something that you want to eat. So you take this pill that's made of a non-kosher powder, which is really kosher because it's not edible, but you eat it. That's called achshavei. I'll give you another example. Also macholas asuras. Normally, the Torah says you're not chayef unless you eat a kezayis. But some cases, there's an achshavei. So let's say, for example, you have what's called a birya. A birya means it's a whole living creature. It might be dead now, but when it was alive, it was alive. And it's less than a kezayis. It's a very small bug. So there might be a principle of achshavei here, which would mean that if you eat it, you're chayev malchus, even though it doesn't have a shear of kezayis. Or, for example, if it falls into a tarovas, a visa veheta, it might asa the whole tarovas because of achshavei. Comes along the Mordechai, and he says that there's a halacha called achshavei, which means that according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu, that the Torah Ukshartim requires that you take apart and put together this kesher on a daily basis. The Torah is now recognizing that kesher as a kesher, even though it's really not a kesher, because of the mitzvah of tefillin generates the achshavei. So what was Rabbeinu Tam's kasha's objection against Rabbeinu Eliyahu? Why would this be also on Shabbos, since according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu, you're telling me that you have to take it apart? It's not a kesher shel kayama. The answer is achshavei. But this would prove the thesis of the Avnei Nezer, once again, that the issue of kesher shel kayama is a universal issue. Is it a kesher in Kol Torkul? Is it not? The very fact that in Hilchas Tefillin, the Torah says that this is a kesher, even though it's going to last for less than a day, because tomorrow, you know, at 6:59, you know, before they start davening, you're going to take it apart and then put it together again. Then, if the Torah recognizes it as a kesher in Hilchas Tefillin, is Mamela, it becomes a kesher even as far as Melechah Shabbos is concerned. Through what mechanism? Asher. Let's see it inside. He says the following: Kaven de Rachmana Amar Liksha B'chol Yom Rachmana Achshavei LeKesher. The Torah considers it and validates it as a kesher, recognizes it as such, even though he's going to take it apart. Ulekach Af B'Shabbos Chayev. Says the Avnei Nezer, according to the Chayodim's approach, it makes no sense. The Mordechai is off the beaten path. Because if your requirement of kesher shel kayama in Shabbos is a requirement of meleches machsheves, then how can you tell me anything about achshavei? Okay, the Torah says that this kesher is a kesher in tefillin. Fine. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, you still need a melacha miskayemes. El al karchach, he says, therefore the only logical conclusion you could derive is that kesher l'shah is potter in Shabbos because it's not a kesher in Kol Torah Kula. But if in Kol Torah Kula it would be a kesher through the principle of achshavei, then you'd be chayef on Shabbos as well. Rabbi Moshe, I don't know if you're in this part, but there's an amazing piece of Torah here of the Avni Nezer. He's the same author as the Igli Tal, the Socket Shot. With your permission, I want to review it one more time. For myself, I mean, it's just so what we call in Yiddish Geschmack. Says the Avni Nezer the following. You cannot take an achshave in Hilchas Tefillin and apply it to Hilchas Shabbos according to the Chayodom if the requirement in Shabbos is based on Meleches Machshavos. Because Tefillin Luchud and Shabbos Luchud. Shabbos has its own requirements, its own standards, based on the regulations that are unique to Shabbos because of Meleches Machshavos. So the fact that the Torah says that this is a kesher for Tefillin, that's fine and dandy, but doesn't tell you anything about Shabbos. But if, on the other hand, the requirement of kesher shel kayom has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. As far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, we've already seen that binyan l'shah havi binyan. Therefore, kesher l'shah havi kesher. The problem is that in Kol HaTorah Kula, as a universal definition of the ideal kesher, the Torah requires kesher shel kayom. And that applies in Kol HaTorah Kula and in Shabbos as well. If it's not a kesher in Kol HaTorah Kula, then it's not going to be a kesher in Hilchos Shabbos. Oh, but if, according to Rabbeinu Eliyahu, when you take it apart on a daily basis, the Torah says that's exactly the kesher which we require on a Torah basis for the mitzvah of tefillin. Ah, that's called achshavei. That achshavei, says the Mordechai, has an impact on Hilchos Shabbos. You are now chai from Melechos Shabbos. So I can utilize the laws of achshavei from tefillin and say that if now I'm tying my tefillin on Shabbos with a kesher that is considered valid as far as the Torah requirement of tefillin is concerned, then I'm going to be chayv on Shabbos for it. So it means, Rabbo said, the bottom line of the Avnei Nezer is that the requirement of kesher shel kayoma in Hilchos Shabbos is nothing more than a spin-off or an application of the universal requirement of kesher in Kol HaTorah Kula. Umina, and from this nafkamina l'Rabbeinu Elio amra Torah likshar b'chol yom v'achshvei l'keshen. That's good according to Rabbeinu Elio. Ach l'Rabbeinu Tam shelo tzorach likshar kol yom. According to Rabbeinu Tam, that you make a kesher shel kayomim kein ein gilish achshvei rachmona l'kesher. And kevan shalocha k'Rabbeinu Tam yotzei she. The final conclusion, the bottom line in the Avnei Nezer, is that we passing like Rabbeinu Tam, which is great as a kula in terms of whether you have to be kosher the tefillin on a daily basis. And the answer is Rabbeinu Tam drops that requirement. He rejects it because he holds that all you have to do is make a kesher liolam, and that's good for tefillin on a daily basis. So we don't have any achshavei here, and therefore, in the case of tefillin, you're going to require kesher liolam, just as in Shabbos you require the kesher liolam because that's your basic definition of kesher as a universal concept. Therefore, if you're taking apart the kesher only on a daily basis for a short period of time, or maybe just for an hour, because you're giving back the tefillin, clearly, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you're not going to be able to see the mitzvah of tefillin. So it means that on the one hand, Rabbeinu Tam is the makil in tefillin, because he's allowing you to tie the tefillin once forever, once and forever more. But on the other hand, if you have an intention to take apart the kesher, then borrowing the universal principle of kesher shel kayoma, as opposed to kesher l'shah in Shabbos, we apply that universally, that a kesher l'shah is not considered a kesher, and therefore if I bar your tefillin, that's considered a kesher l'shah, and I'm not yotzi the mitzvah of tefillin. Now, based on this Avni Nezer breakthrough, he wants to understand a sugyan sukkah on Daf Lamed Gimel. The question is there a possibility or shall we say, is there a permissibility to accomplish what's called igud haminim based on the principle of lulav tzarech agad on Shabbos itself? And the Gemara says that it's not permissible to do an igud of the dalet minim on Shabbos. Why would you want to? So this sugya goes back to a period of time before the Gzeira of Rabbah. So we have to know that if Shabbos overlaps with the first day of Sukkot, maybe I should say it the other way around, if the first day of Sukkot overlaps with Shabbos, and the Torah says, L'kachim l'chem b'yom ha-rishon, that according to one man, the Yom of the Gemara, that's from Yehuda, Lulav Tzarech Agad. You could only be Yotzei the mitzvah of Lulav if you make the Agad. So this gentleman, I don't want to give him a bad name, who should have taken care of preparing the Agad on Erev Yontif, Erev Shabbos, failed to do so. Now he's got his Dalet Minim on the table. And the only way he can be Yotzei the mitzvah of Dalet Minim is according to this man, the Yom Rabbi Yehuda, through Agad. The Gemara says he can't make the Agad on Shabbos. Why? Because that's called a Kesher, and that's one of the 39 Malachas of Shabbos. Frek the Yorach Laner, I don't get it. Why can't he have in mind that as soon as Shabbos ends, or Yontif ends, he's going to undo it? And that would save him from Malachas Kosher. Why? Because that would make it a Kesher She'eno Shel Kayama. Again, the Kesher itself is Kayama, materially. Because you need a very specific and permanent Kesher in order to be Mekayim in the midst of Lulav Tzarech Agad, according to that idea. But nevertheless, there's another requirement in Kesher, and that means a Kesher Shel Kayama in terms of his intention. So why doesn't he just decide and declare, I'm making this Agad on Shabbos Sukkot up until, but not beyond Motzi Shabbos. And on Motzi Shabbos, I'm going to take apart this Kesher. Now here, we get into the Machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam that we discussed before. Because Rashi holds that if you're going to take apart this Kesher within a week, that's mutar l'chatchila. According to the Rambam, if it's a kesher shel kayama, then it's asur midrabbanan. Even if you intend to take it apart. Because you remember the Rambam had two different conditions, both of which have to be met in order to be chayav for kesher d'oraisa. But if you meet one of those two conditions, either one, then you violate an isur d'rabbanan. So therefore, according to the Rambam, the Gemara makes a lot of sense, and the objection of the Aruch HaNer is not valid. What was the objection of the Aruch HaNer? Why not allow him to do the Agad with a condition and a mental decision that I intend to take apart this Agad right after Shabbos? According to the Rambam, you really haven't solved your problem, because according to the Rambam, you still have a Kesher Shel Kayama from the perspective of the expertise that it takes to create this Kesher, and to Maisa Uman, because Agad has all sorts of requirements, and therefore you're going to be violating an Issur Rabbanan. Could be that according to the Taz, you're even violating an Issur Kesher D'oraisa, because the other condition was that it lasts throughout Shabbos, according to the Taz's definition. Not the way the Mishnah Berurah understood it based on the Prima Godim, that it's got to be Leol and Vod to be a Kesher Shel Kayama. The Taz says it's got to last till after Shabbos. Once it lasts till after Shabbos, that makes it into a Kesher Shel Kayama. So you've got two conditions met over here. And the Gemara is very smooth. But let's take Rashi Shita. Rashi Shita was that if it's Eino Shel Kayama, which means it's less than or up to a week that he intends to keep it there, then it's mutar l'chatchila. And there the Aruch HaNer has a very basic objection to, or kasha, shall we say, on the Gemara in Sukkah. Why isn't this mutar l'chatchila? Just let him decide that he's going to, or announce that he's going to take apart the kesher after after Yontif, after Shabbos. The Prima Gadim extends this kasha to tzitzis. Why? Because halacha is that you're not allowed to be kosher tzitzis on Shabbos. In fact, the Prima Gadim, why not just have in mind that after Shabbos you'll take apart the kesha? That makes it into a kshira l'shah, and it would be mutl chatchila. Be mutl chatchila in the case of tefillin, when you make the kesher on Shabbos and you intend to take it apart after Shabbos. Or in the case of agad, you make the agad on Shabbos, you intend to take it apart after Shabbos. So we have three kashas. It's really one kasha. But three applications of the same kasha. Why is it us to make a keshel tefillin on Shabbos? Why is it us to make a keshel tzitzis on Shabbos? And why is it us to make the agad on Shabbos? Why does Gemara and Erevin assume that you're not allowed to be kosher tefillin on Shabbos? Why not just make it into a keshel l'shah? But let's go back to the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer tells us that this is not a kesher, because the very fact that you intend to take apart the kesher is mafkia the kesher as far as the shame kesher of Kol HaTorah Kula. It's not a Shabbos halacha the way the Chayyadim learned it, but rather it's a universal halacha of what constitutes kesher. It's like what I say the Rambam when he describes writing on Shabbos with Dio. That's not dio. It's a temporary dio, like a peros, which we said was universal halacha that even in get it wouldn't be considered ksiva. Here also we have a case of a kesher that on a universal basis would not be considered a kesher. Why? Because it's a kesher l'shah, and we're assuming that kesher l'shah lo avi kesher. No, if it's lo avi kesher, it means not a kesher, neither for Shabbos, nor for tefillin, nor for tzitzis, and therefore the Prima Gadim's kasha is no kasha. What would you gain by allowing him to do this agad, or this kesher shall tefillin or shall tzitz on Shabbos al menas that he take it apart after Shabbos? You wouldn't gain anything, because you'd be undermining the mitzvah of tefillin or lulav or tzitzis. And why is that so? Because this halacha of kesher shall kayom is a universal halacha that defines the very essence of kesher in Kol HaTorah Kula. So the Aruch HaNer's kash is completely answered by the Avnei Nezer. Everybody have that?
Yeah.
Guys, you don't seem to get very emotional about it. I mean, I would say the Avnei Nezer deserves a PhD just for this chiddush. You know what I'm saying? It's like everything, like all these sugyas fit into place. You know, Rabbeinu Tam fits into place, Rabbeinu Eliyahu, the way the Mordechai fits into place. The Akshavei Svara, I mean, we're dealing with a universal question about Kesher Shel Kayom. If it's a Kesher Shel Shah, it's not a Kesher Shel Kayom, and neither in Shabbos nor in Kol HaTorah Kula. And now we understand the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah says that you have a problem to make this Kesher on Shabbos. Ayin Yoruch HaNer says, why don't you just have more that you'll take it apart after Shabbos? Then you don't have the Kesher of Tefillin, you don't have the Kesher of Sukkah, of Lulav.
I'm not sure. I still don't understand where there's a tefillin here, because you don't put tefillin on the
job. Right. But he's just saying that in the Gemara in Erevin, the Gemara says that you want to wear the tefillin on Shabbos in order to, to accomplish the shmirah.
Yes,
right. So it won't be hotzah, in order to circumvent the hotzah issue, you have to put it on in the way that you would have the mitzvah of tefillin. Again, that really requires a lot of analysis in terms of tefillin and in terms of leches hotzah. Again, it's a the sugya in Erevin is most famous for Baltosif, but the truth is that there's so many different dimensions to the sugya in Erevin. The dimensions in terms of what constitutes hotzah. We have something called a takshit, we have something called a beged, we have something which is called a masoi. So whereas a masoi would be a violation of Maleches Hotzah if you wear it in such a way that it's a takshit because it's tefillin, then that which would normally be a masoi all of a sudden becomes a beged or a takshit. I look or it's baltosif to add another day of tefillin. And the answer is that you're only doing it for the sake of saving the tefillin, not for the sake of being Mekayim, a new mitzvah of tefillin, but it's got to be royal mitzvah tefillin. Mm-hmm. And the question is, why is it Royal Mitzvah's Tefillin if you're going to take it apart? And the answer is that right now he needs it as a Keshel Tefillin. Oh. Now he wants to go back to the Ramah, meaning to Meleches Ksiva. Excuse me. We raise the question, why is it that Binyan L'Shah, remember the Ar Samach's proof from the Bavli, is Asr, it's called a Binyan. Whereas Kesha L'Shah is not considered a Kesha, and you don't violate Meleches Kesha. And the answer is that Binyan L'Shah constitutes a Binyan in Kol Torah Kula. For example, there's a mitzvah building the Mishkan. The Mishkan is a temporary structure. It's a Binyan L'Shah. And yet, it's considered a Binyan. But in Shabbos, you might vacillate back and forth and wonder whether or not it's a Binyan as far as Melech's Binyan is concerned. And since Binyan L'Shah is a Binyan L'Kol HaTorah Kula, therefore, we could suggest that a Binyan L'Shah constitutes a Binyan as far as Shabbos is concerned. Again, what are we doing now? We're assuming, like the Avnei Nezer, that the issue here is a universal issue. And if in universal terms it's called a kesher, then it'll be a kesher as far as Shabbos is concerned. If in universal terms it's called a binyan, then as far as Shabbos it's also called a binyan. So if I can prove to you that binyan l'shah havi binyan and kol tarkula, then it would be a binyan even as far as Shabbos is concerned. If I convince you that the kesher is not a kesher and kol tarkula, why? Because it's a temporary kesher, like the case of barring someone's tefillin, then it's ipso facto not a kesher as far as Melechus Shabbos is concerned. If that be the case, we begin to understand the difference between Binyan L'Shah and Kesher L'Shah. Why is that Binyan L'Shah is Chayav, according to the Ar Samach, whereas Kesher L'Shah is not Chayav? It's even Mutal Chatchila, according to Rashi, maybe even in certain conditions according to the Rambam as well. And the answer is because Kesher, as a universal concept, requires Li'at, Li'olam. It requires that it be not L'Shah, but Li'olam. But binyan as a universal concept, even if it's only l'shah, it constitutes a binyan. And the Avnei Nezer now is very excited because he's finally put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And if we apply this to Meleches Kosev, we might be tempted to assume that ksiva l'shah is not ksiva. And why? Because here we're dealing with the universal halacha. Remember, we said that if you write a get with mei peros, the get is not worth the paper it's written on. So you see that the concept of l'shah in terms of meleches ksiva is a universal concept that defines ksiva. We also discussed, of course, the Sefer Trumas, who wants to suggest that if you write with your left hand, then that's not ksiva even as far as tefillin is concerned. We're dealing with universal definitions of ksiva. So ksiva she'ino li'olam, which means a ksiva l'shah, is not a ksiva as far as kol Torah Kula is concerned. In that sense, ksiva is similar to which case? Which malach of the two? Bone or kosher? It's going to be similar to Meleches Kosher. Why is it similar to Meleches Kosher? Because just like the Avnei Nezer insists that the requirement of Keshel Kayama is a universal halacha, as far as the abstract definition of what constitutes a Kesher, so too in Meleches Ksiva, our definition is Ksiva and Kol HaTorah Kula. And if Ksiva and Kol HaTorah Kula requires Kayama, as we saw in the case of a get that was written on an oleh, or a tefillin that was written with your left hand, so we're dealing with ksiva halachas and definitions of kol Torah Kula, then these requirements are going to apply to Shabbos as well, insofar Shabbos is just an application of the universal principle of ksiva. And therefore, the Ramah is justified by saying that if I intend to open up this book and to undo the ksiva, That's only Ksiva L'Shah. And since Ksiva L'Shah is not Ksiva Kol Tarkula, it's not Ksiva on Shabbos as well. All this is good before we get to Tosa and the Ramban and Erevin. Tosa, Ramban and Erevin, and this you'll see quoted on the left column if you have it, say that Kesha L'Shah Kasha L'Tfila. Again, how they're going to deal with all the kashas and all the sugis that we had, I don't know. But let's just accept it right now on face value. And maybe we'll pick this up next time and get more into detail about it. But be that as it may, Tosis and the Ramban both agree that a Kesha L'Shah is Kasha L'Tfilin. Now, if a Kesha L'Shah is Kasha L'Tfilin, why is a Kesha L'Shah Potter on Shabbos? Where willy-nilly we have no choice but to introduce the Chayonim's approach that the requirement of Keshal Kayama and Shabbos is a unique Shabbos halacha derived from Aleches Machsheves. And based on this objection, the Avnei Nezer backtracks a little and he says that Enechinami, according to Tosis and the Ramban, those two Rishonim as opposed to other Rishonim, Keshal Ashah is considered a keshel in Kol HaTarkula, and in Shabbos, because of Meleches Machsheves, like the Chayonim insisted, it's not considered keshel. Okay, Rabbosai, so this is as far as I was able to get for this shiur. If you can possibly make a note that we got up to the word Vechein, if you see that paragraph on the left side, and that's where we would like to pick it up in Mirtz Hashem, B'li Neder on Yom Shlishi, am I right? Because that's when we get together on Shlishi and Chamishi. All right, we'll stop here.